Unemployed. It doesn't have a nice ring to it, does it? The very word is negative, and that's probably because that's how most of us view unemployment. Back in the late 80s, when Australia went through one of its last major recessions, my dad's job was made redundant. Overnight, where he thought he was going in life changed. He'd loved his job working in the television industry. It was exciting. It was a chance for him to use his gifts, gave him an identity, helped him to pay off the brand new house he had just built, and then it was gone. That experience had a profound impact on him and his relationship with God. He wondered where God was. He was angry at his industry for failing to protect him after he'd given so much, worked so hard. He swore he would never work in such an industry again. And he was disappointed with the church's response. He'd served in the church for many years, but felt like nobody really cared or supported him when he needed it. So he left it all behind. He and my mum sold their brand new home, took us out of Sydney, and we started travelling around Australia in a caravan as my dad looked for jobs and wondered what could be next. When we think about what it means to be unemployed, perhaps our first thought is a lack of wages, no money. To be unemployed is often associated with poverty. If you don't have a job that pays, you need to reduce your living expenses, eat less, less entertaining and socializing. You can struggle to make ends meet, struggle to pay off your mortgage or rent. To be unemployed can be to expect scarcity, to be vulnerable. But maybe even just as damaging as a lack of wages can be the loss of identity. Our work has a way of defining who we are. One of the first things we'll ask someone when we meet them is not who is your family or where do you live, but what do you do? What do you do for work? And depending on how someone answers us, it gives us a sense of their social status. We can make judgments about how wealthy they are, how educated they are, how interesting we find them. Many of us are proud of the work we do. Our work says something about the kind of people we are or we want to be. Many of us see our paid work as part of our vocation, something God has called us into, perhaps. So when you don't have paid work or you're looking for work, it can be crushing to your sense of self. Trying to apply for jobs, sending in your resume, going for interviews can feel like you are being examined. And if you can't find a job, you start to think, maybe there's something wrong with me. I'm a failure. Because we define ourselves by our skills and training, by how productive we are, when that is stripped away, it can cause a crisis of confidence, a crisis in our identities. When you're unemployed, especially if it goes on for a long time, there can be a feeling of shame, depression, isolation. It can feel like you are cut off from the rest of society. People might even treat you differently. After all, the words we use when talking about the unemployed are words like dole bludger, low skill, disadvantaged, lazy. It lays the blame on the individual. It must be your fault that you can't get a job. Don't be so picky. Why should all these hardworking taxpayers support you? The government even established a hotline this year for people to dob in so-called dole bludgers. The view of people who are unemployed has been shaped by some economists who describe people as homo economicus. We are autonomous, rational, self-interested, materialistic creatures, they say. This is our identity. The goal is to raise children into adults who become productive members working in the economy, efficient and ideally self-reliant, ready to compete for limited resources. The belief is that people are fundamentally selfish, and a person's value is calculated based on their role within the marketplace. Work that pays well is a sign of prestige. We take it as a sign that that person is worth it. They must be particularly clever or bright. If you're unproductive, if you're not working, your value decreases because your buying power decreases. That's one way to view people. In contrast, Jesus tells a story of an employer looking to hire workers to pick the grapes in his vineyard. He goes out and employs workers in the morning, promising them a decent wage. And then he goes out at midday, sees laborers sitting around in the marketplace with nothing to do, and he says, "Do you want a job?" "Yes," they say, "we do." So they go and join the work in the vineyard. The landowner returns to the marketplace for the third time that day, and then a fourth time. And each time he is there, he sees people looking for work, and he asks, "Why are you here?" And they reply, "Nobody has hired us." And each time he invites them to go and work in his vineyard, and they do. It's almost a comedy at this point. You imagine that there's so many workers in his vineyard. Not only is this landowner incredibly generous, continuing to offer work to anyone who needs it, even when it's very late in the day and there's only an hour or two before the sun sets. But when it comes to the end of the day and the foreman is arranging to pay everyone for their labour, the landowner gives these instructions. When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going to the first." The foreman does this, and the last workers come forward and are given a denarius. The second last workers are also given a denarius, and on it goes, each worker paid the same, a denarius. The first workers are outraged. They have worked all day, and they end up with exactly the same amount of money as these last labourers. But the landowner says, "I have paid you fairly. You agree to this price. What business is it of yours if I give the same amount to these other workers?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last. This story Jesus tells is outrageous. It goes against every instinct. It doesn't seem fair. It doesn't seem to make good business sense. The workers who are the most productive, efficient, putting in the most hours, get exactly the same as those who started late. This is a story that runs counter to how we've been formed. In this story, people aren't rewarded extra for being productive. They are paid a fair wage, yes, but the focus is on these last workers. They are the ones who are lifted up. Now, let's be clear. All the workers in this story are needy. All of them are the poorest people in this community. They are ones without land. That's why they're looking to get paid wages. Disruption has come and they are struggling. They are on the brink. And there's not enough work for everyone. Supply and demand. That's why there's still workers in the marketplace at different points throughout the day. They are all vulnerable. And the landowner ensures that each worker is given a living wage. A denarius was considered to be a living wage, enough at least to provide food for their family for that day. This is a story that pushes against the idea that our identity is to be found in the work we do. No, says Jesus. It's to be found in the grace of God. God is like this landowner. God takes the initiative and reaches out. No matter who you are, you have value in God's sight. A value that doesn't increase or decrease depending on what you are doing. You think society has forgotten you? God has not forgotten you. Now, maybe such grace doesn't resonate. Maybe it can't until you realize you are vulnerable, until disruption comes into your life. If you've never experienced being suddenly fired or made redundant, if you've never been underemployed or unemployed, maybe you still believe that if you just work hard, that life will turn out well for you. But if you've experienced disruption, you know there are so many things out of our control. Our ability to work is not as secure as we imagine. Industries can collapse. Companies can file for bankruptcy. Stock markets can tumble. We can lose our investments. Disasters can destroy our businesses. You can have an accident at work. The idea that if you work hard or gifted, you will always succeed is a lie. Life doesn't always work out like that. Reversals can happen quicker than we might think. And if we put our identity, our worth in our jobs, we will flounder. But Jesus Jesus tells a story when the reversal happens in the opposite direction, where the harvester who's worked for the least amount of time is paid the same as the harvester who spent the whole day picking grapes. Jesus is inviting us to find our sense of selves not in what we do or how much we make, but in God's love. Let your identity be formed by grace. Some say the Great Resignation is coming to Australia. I don't know if you've heard of it. Some people say there's going to be many people choosing to resign from their work because the pandemic has made them reassess their lives and they don't want to live like they did before. They don't want long commutes. They don't want a job they don't enjoy. There's another way to look at unemployment. I think if you use the word unemployment, we often think it's undesirable, but actually for some people, isn't that the dream? It is very satisfying sometimes to go up to your boss and say, "I quit." I have done it a few times, and I probably enjoyed saying it more than maybe I should have. Sometimes we choose not to work so we can take time off and travel, or raise children, or study, train in a different career. We might have seasons out of the workforce, and these can be significant times when we can reconsider who we are and what direction we want to go in. My dad, after taking many months off with us in the caravan, ended up going in a completely different direction in terms of work. He started a family business with one of his brothers and parents. We all moved to Queensland. And they got into landscaping and gardening, of all things. None of them had worked in that industry before. In the Greco-Roman Empire that Jesus was part of, the dream for many of the philosophers was not to work. Work was considered a pain, demeaning, something those who were unfortunate had to carry out. But for the elite, the wealthy, to not work was a sign you had made it. Aristotle mused that to be unemployed meant you were on your way to living a worthwhile life. You could focus on contemplating the higher order of things. It's only when you don't have to be concerned about wages that you can really pursue the common good. And this vision has lingered on. For a long time in the church, those who dedicated their lives to contemplation and prayer were considered to be pursuing something more godly than those who had to work in the fields growing food to support everyone. It lingers on in the idea of one day technology, robots, automation, freeing us from the need to work. It lingers on in the lure of the lottery. Imagine if I won millions of dollars, what would I do? I'd quit my job tomorrow, so many of us say. It lingers on in the universal basic income idea. What happens if everyone was paid a basic living wage by the government, what would you do with your time? Would you use your time differently? Now, all of this can sound individualistic and maybe privileged. Homo economicus imagines us primarily as selfish individuals, but it fails to consider grace. It fails to consider how deeply relational we are. In Jesus' parable, the wealthy landowner uses his power to empower others. He's community-minded. This is not an autonomous individual just putting his own needs first, but he extends what he has to others. He keeps going back to that marketplace. He keeps showing grace. Sometimes when Christians have read this story, they see God's grace, but it's a grace removed from our economic practices. The other Christians and even non-Christians over the centuries have interpreted this parable as supporting the idea of a living wage, saying all workers, but especially insecure workers, should be paid a living wage. There's an expectation in Jewish society, actually, that part of the reason why you worked was to support those in need, help people back on their feet in your community. So what word, what action of grace can Christians offer today to those who are unemployed? Perhaps those who are sitting for long hours in a Centrelink queue. And for those with the luxury of not having to earn money, what could you do with your time to help your community flourish? How can we be community-minded people? The label unemployed can be really unhelpful because it doesn't capture all the important unpaid work that happens. Unpaid work is often undervalued, and yet it's kind of essential. Work that involves caring for others, particularly the most vulnerable in our society, like children or the elderly or the disabled, is some of the most important work we can do. So many churches and charities exist because of volunteers giving their time and effort. There is good work that should be valued more. When we think about work, paid, unpaid, we need to think not just about us as individuals, but those around us. We need to consider the whole community and its needs. In 1888, unemployment was rampant in the city of London, so much so that people were taking to the streets and clashing with the police. The Salvation Army, led by William and Catherine Booth, began to respond. And William was reluctant, actually. He didn't believe at first that the gospel should impact social structures. But then he became convinced as he interacted with different people and as he was challenged to think about reforms. And so the Salvation Army created city workshops where an unemployed worker could receive board and lodgings. Then they provided training and food rations, sometimes even cash allowances. The Salvation Army then would try to link workers with potential employers. William Booth began to imagine what it would look like for God's grace to enter and transform a whole economy. And he writes in this book that became a bestseller, kind of called Darkest England and the Way Forward. He says, "There's no gainsaying the immensity of the problem. It is appalling enough to make us despair. Without God, we can do nothing in this frightful chaos of human misery. But with God, we can do all things in the faith that he has made us in his image. We face even this hideous wreckage of humanity with a cheerful confidence that if we are but faithful to our own higher calling, he'll not fail to open up a way of deliverance." Christians today are experimenting with such actions, like choosing to pay lower skilled workers above market wages, intentionally hiring former offenders or people with disabilities or single parents, profit sharing with employees. The church should be a place where such creativity is encouraged and those labels of unemployed or employed fall away. Everyone can find welcome, care, and purpose. We are a community that seeks to form people not to be homo economicus, but people who dwell in the grace of God, dependent on God and others, spiritual as well as materialistic beings, not just interested in ourselves, but relational. Caring for people and land more than profit, able to share our resources with others, able to come alongside and support others when they're struggling, advocate for change when necessary. Our value is not found within the marketplace. It's not found in how productive we are. Our value is found in God. May the grace of God shape the way that you use your time. Let us pray.